Well, crack the Washington Post this morning. Go online. They've got the first of a three-part series. Investigative reporter Dana Priest broke an exclusive story about the culture of intelligence contractors in the U.S. government. Now, after years of research and information gathering, Priest found that billions of dollars are wasted because of redundancies between the intelligence community and contractors. And even though many top government officials know this is going on, little is being done to stop it. Dana Priest joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Dana, I understand you've been following this story for years. When did you start? And I'm curious about what made you want to cover this.
Well, I started with my partner, Bill Arkin, about 2 years ago. He and I both had noticed after 9/11, because we both covered the intelligence world, that something had changed, that it had gotten so big and so desperate. And we decided, well, let's try to get our arms around it and actually see how big it's gotten. So we call it sort of our genome project, where we set out to map the intelligence world that is responsible for responding to the attacks of 9/11. And when we did that, what we found was really what we call an alternative geography of the United States. We found and identified 1,300 government organizations that do work at the top secret level, and another 1,900 companies that do work at the top secret level. And we chose top secret because when we started to count secret, it was so big we could not count it accurately even within 2 years.
And you talk about the secret map of the United States, and I looked at it, and it looks like those maps that Verizon uses to talk about how good their coverage is. I mean, it's red all over the country. Intelligence community has, I'll say, metastasized everywhere.
Well, we have identified over 10,000 locations where this work is going on, both by the government directly and by contractors. But the point that the conclusions that we came to after doing this was, and after interviewing hundreds of former and current defense and intelligence officials, is that the system, while there are some improvements in intelligence sharing, for example, it's just become so large and unwieldy that no one inside really knows how much it costs or how many people it employs or how many different programs exist. And so this issue of redundancy comes about because it has become so big, and there's so many organizations doing the same thing, and there's not enough coordination, and people sometimes don't even know that other organizations are doing the same thing, so they can't take advantage of it.
You know, redundancy could be a shorter way of saying mismanagement and waste. So I'm wondering, just how much money are we talking about here?
Well, of course, that's classified, but the public figure that's out there is $75 billion, which is two and a half times greater than the amount of money that we were spending on September 10th, 2001. But it's actually much larger than that, because that doesn't count a lot of the military programs. So, in essence, nobody knows how much it exactly costs. But one thing is for sure, that contractors have added to the cost. During the Bush administration, the idea was that contractors cost less than federal employees. Now, this administration and other economists have repudiated that and said, actually, federal workers are 25% cheaper than contractors. And what's more is that corporations have a profit motive. That's why they're corporations. And so they don't have an incentive to save money. Their incentive is always going to be to spend more, to get more contracts, and to grow bigger.
And Dana Priest of the Washington Post, as you know, a lot of politicians would say, well, you can't put a price on national security. You can't put a price on American lives. So even though this is a big number, it's money well spent. But does money spent equal safer Americans? Part of your piece suggests that maybe we're not safer.
Well, again, officials we talked to inside said the system's become so big, they can't answer that question. They can't judge it. And as a result, you know, how can you answer that question? You can't. And that's
right.
Not necessarily making us safer if you can't even figure out how the money's being spent, whether it's being spent wisely. You look at the example of the Christmas Day bomber. We had in the National Counterterrorism Center 300 analysts looking at counterterrorism data. the problem there wasn't that there weren't enough people. The problem was some of them weren't going deep enough into the many, many tips and data points that they had received about Yemen. But when we had hearings, and the Director of National Intelligence, Dennis Blair, at the time said the problem was nobody knew whose responsibility it was to get to the bottom of the pile of data and to figure out where the leads stopped. And he took responsibility for that, but also what it shows you is that the system has gotten so big that the lines of responsibility have actually blurred, and agencies believe it's someone else's responsibility to check everything out until the very end of it.
And that's one anecdote. You have another in your story of Major Nedal Malik Hassan, the alleged Fort Hood shooter, who was sending up warning flags when he worked at Walter Reed in Washington. But the unit, the counterintelligence unit in the Army that should have known about him, at least they were supposed to have known, was just 25 miles up the road and missed him.
And they never got a clue. And one of the reasons is, at that time, their commander had decided to do something different. She wanted to look at the terrorist organizations within the United States, which is, you know, fine on the surface, except that's what the FBI does. That's what other Homeland Security does. So instead of really looking in their own backyard, which is what that unit is tasked with, they went about doing something that others had already done. And even the top levels of the Army said that activity on their part didn't amount to anything they didn't know. But what did is the fact that they had somebody within their own ranks who was talking like this, and nobody reported it to them. They probably don't even know that unit exists. And so, you know, that's an example of when failure to do your own job correctly and excellently can make a difference.
Dana, you have a large passage in your story about a place called Liberty Crossing. It sounds like a lovely place to shop. Do you explain?
Well, it's actually the headquarters of the Director of National Intelligence and the National Counterterrorism Center. It's a place that is trying to hide itself in the middle of a giant community called McLean. And it was set up by Congress after the 9/11 Commission recommended it to be a coordinator of all intelligence agencies. And it certainly grew. There's over 1,200 people that work there and almost an equal number of contractors. But people within both the defense intelligence community, which is very large, and the CIA and the National Security Agency and the other intelligence units say that really it doesn't do that job very well. So what it does do well is grow, and what it has made some progress in forcing organizations to share intelligence with each other. It's made some progress in trying to have common tradecraft standards and in procurement reform. But on the big issue of how people relate to one another, how they coordinate with one another, it's still, many people believe, is not doing what it needs to do. And more than that, or more surprising to me, was how many people with good motivations didn't even know what it exactly does. And that's true for both of those organizations. The National Counterterrorism Center is supposed to be the place where the most exquisite, most sophisticated counterterrorism analysis is done. And yet no one I spoke to outside that center could really point to any report that had given them any more information than their own intelligence analysis operation could.
You know, Dana, you write that this is a problem that more than one top-ranking government official is very well aware of. So what are the odds anything's actually going to happen?
You know, I think the odds are good. The Secretary Bob Gates and CIA Director Leon Panetta, who both granted me on-the-record interviews, seem to be committed to changing the system, to looking at it and figuring out where the most effective programs are and where the waste is, in part because they both agree that the spending level is not sustainable given the recession. And so unless we want to grow into a national security state where a lot of our civil and domestic programs just get diminished in favor of that, which nobody wants, including them, then we're going to have to take a hard look at the efficacy of these programs. And right now, that is another problem, that they're not judging the programs by what they actually accomplish. They're not looking with a fine-tooth comb to see what works and what doesn't, and they're not doing that on a systematic level. Secretary Gates said that he is going to do that. They're interested in our findings. We have a website that's pretty remarkable that people can go on and look around themselves.
And one of the things we learned earlier this morning is that most members of Congress, except just a handful, don't know what they're voting on when they pass all of this money you're talking about. Most of them don't even know what it's for. Well, Dana Priest, Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter at The Washington Post, who brought us the story on Walter Reed and treatment of troops there, now brings us an exclusive on the size and growth of the national security state in the United States. Dana, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.